Would you stand with me as we read together to come before God's Word this morning? And as we read our passage for this morning from Mark chapter 10, let's read out loud together, shall we? And they came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And many rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he is calling you." And throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said to him, "Rabbi, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Go your way, your faith has made you well." Immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. There was someplace on the road from Perea, which is over that way, someplace on the road heading to Jericho and then up to Jerusalem. And so in verse 46, we're told that Jesus and his disciples, they have now come to Jericho, and that as they are leaving Jericho, they and the crowd encounter Bartimaeus, who we're told is a blind beggar, and who is the son of Timaeus. Bar in Hebrew meaning son, and so he is Bartimaeus. And beyond that, we really don't know a whole lot about who this man is, except what he is. And so we need to understand the where and the when of that. This is the pilgrimage. So Jericho is a stopping point on the journey to Jerusalem that Jesus has been on. Jesus and the disciples, he's been following them, but they left Galilee up in the north, and they probably followed the route, crossing over the Jordan at some point, and down through Berea, and then on the east side of the Jordan River, they've been there, and now they've crossed back into Judea, and have arrived at Jericho. And they have arrived at Jericho with hundreds, maybe thousands, or a whole lot of people who are also traveling to Jerusalem. Why? Why are all these people going to Jerusalem? Passover, right? It's really the high holy days of Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, and then 50 days after Passover, the Winter Harvest Festival is Shavuot, which we know as Chanukah. And 50 days afterwards. There's a time to be in Jerusalem. And so the nation is on a move. They're on a pilgrimage. They're going to Jerusalem. And it is Calcay, right? The crowd, all these people, they're traveling together. They're camping together. There's reunions, their families, and their shish kebab, their tamos, their nuts. They're a good time. And in the spirit of this camaraderie and community and celebration, there's an anticipation of what's going to happen when we get up to Jerusalem. And so Jericho is the last stop on that pilgrimage. So look at the map, right? Jericho is close to the north side. You were kind of going over here. You're into the Dead Sea. You're thinking about the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is the lowest place on dry land, the lowest place on earth. Then the Jericho itself is 845 feet below sea level. That's deep. Jerusalem, which is up in the mountains, is 2,425 someplace in there, feet above sea level. So that's an elevation change for you now. About 3,300 feet elevation change. And so the distance between that is about 20 miles, which is what an average person would think. An average person can walk uphill about 20 miles a day. 26 if you're flat, 20 if you're going uphill. So, and I can tell you from personal experience, that elevation change, one day's walk, that elevation change is an air pop in this field. And today, there's a freeway that goes there. But in Jesus' day, it was a long and windy and dangerous road up into the hill. And the Psalms of Ascent, Psalms 120 to 134, is what these pilgrims, they would sing together. They were going up this long and winding road together. They were having kind of worship experience together. And they were singing songs that expressed a wide variety of emotions and anticipation of their serious spiritual experiences, what they're going to share together in Jerusalem. Psalm 121, you should be familiar, right? Psalm 121, I lift my eyes up to the hill. And they're going up, and they're looking up to the hills, and Jericho to Jerusalem, and anticipating, seeing the temple, and they're winding their way up. I look on the eyes to the hills, but the Lord waits for my help come, my help come. And the Lord says, I'm going to be able to come. The Lord is coming. So along that road, you can imagine the road that leads to that ascent and going up, there's probably people that are selling stuff, and you got trinkets and baubles and things to the church and all of that. And there are beggars that are begging. They're begging for alms. This is prime real estate. So, and in the midst of all that is Bartimaeus. He's wanting to do these things to be begging for alms. And maybe he's staked out there because he's thinking, and probably they were, is that these people are heading up to an experience with God. They're a little more open to thinking about the relationship with God. Maybe they're going to be a little bit easier, freer with the freckles. Right? We know that people are here in town. They stake out some specific spots. There's a reason for that. People show up before services and after services because maybe they're thinking that maybe we spend time with God or anticipating and maybe we'll be a little freer with our giving. Reality, right? But unlike here, back in Jesus' day, there were no community services. There were no community programs available to help. And for begging back then was a life and death desperation. And for Bartimaeus in this world of darkness and poverty, there are no other options. So Bartimaeus, he sits with many on this road, begging from the hundreds of pilgrims that are passing by. And as he's sitting there, he's listening to what people are talking about as they're passing by. A huge topic of that discussion that can gather their views. And most probably by the way, if you're in trouble, you're talking about what Jesus has been teaching about. They've been dealing with the miracle that Jesus has done, especially the blind seeing. That probably really resonated with Bartimaeus. And he heard about Jesus, how he was up in Nazareth, how Jesus claimed to be the one that Isaiah was talking about. Remember that? The synagogue up in Nazareth, Jesus opened the scroll there, for him to read from Isaiah, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he's loving me to proclaim good news to the poor, he's helping to proclaim liberty to the captives, and recovery of sight to the blind, to put to liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim and we can know from what we know of how Bartimaeus responds to Jesus and what's coming, we see the response that is set between them. We can understand that as Bartimaeus is sitting there and he's soaking all that in, Bartimaeus is connecting the dots. He's processing Jesus. He's adding up these things in his mind and he's coming to his own conclusions about what he's Jesus is. So in verse 47, when Bartimaeus hears that it's Jesus of Nazareth, he's passing by and this crowd of pilgrims, he cries out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Let's, before we move on, we've got to be clear here on this conclusion that Bartimaeus has come to, how he's processing Jesus. Son of David is a title that has two meanings. So one of them is royal, right? Son of David speaks to Jesus' royal lineage. Jesus is the descendant of the King David. So he's able to sit on the throne of Israel. The title is also messianic, because people knew that the Messiah will sit on the throne of David. And so while the man is prophesying in Jesus, and in doing that, he comes to the conclusion that Jesus is the Messiah foretold by the prophet. Meaning that Bartimaeus is crying out to his disciples, crying out to the Christ for mercy, knowing that it's Jesus alone is able to help him in the darkness and poverty where he's living. Verses 48 to 50, before three responses, Bartimaeus is crying out, here's three responses. The first response is the crowd that's rebuking Bartimaeus. That's what they're telling him. Knock it off, dude. And you know, because he's been following Jesus around since chapter 1, we know that the disciples, they're still fuzzy on what Jesus is doing and why. And we know that the crowd, the paparazzi, have their expectations of who Jesus is and what they're expecting him to do. And so they all have their version of who the Messiah was supposed to be and what the Son of David was supposed to do and putting up his Jewish kingdom and all that. And what we know was all about them, it's not about God and what Jesus is actually doing. And so the blind beggar, the crowd is seeing Bartimaeus, and they're hearing Bartimaeus, who's one among many of these beggars, who's crying out of the earth. Now they're looking at this guy, hey, who is this guy? And what is he going to contribute to all that? To the mission and the work of Jesus, and he's coming confrontation, he's going to come in Jerusalem when Jesus gets there, and you know, what is that going to mean to those that are pilgriming on the ship, and what, you know, they're all thinking about themselves, and here's these poor blind beggars, and this guy's a nuisance. He's going to stretch it, and he's potentially going to keep Jesus from going to Jerusalem and confronting the leaders there, and that's when he's coming in, which is what we're with about all this, and so the response of the crowd is just, oh, dude, you know? I know it's this guy. Keep him from distracting Jesus. And the second response is Bartimaeus. He cries out all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me! And the word for cry is in Greek it is kazo, which isn't just sort of like this bursting out, you know, Son of David! It's the same word that's used. Remember the possessed man in the Decapolis, right? Remember this? In the tombs at night, and he's screaming, and he's screaming, and he's blood curling, toe curling, sound piercing, scales screeching going through the night out of the tomb. Same word.
so the crowd is telling Bartimaeus to shut up, and he screams louder. And the desperation of his situation and his need, it overwhelms him in his sense of pride and restraint and dignity. His only hope, Jesus, the Son of David, is passing by, and he really doesn't give a rip about what anybody else thinks about him. And the third response comes from Jesus. He stops. And he stops. And when Jesus stops, everybody stops. Let's be clear. Jesus could have walked over to Bartimaeus where he was sitting. Jesus stopped and called for Bartimaeus. This is a teaching moment. Jesus is making a point here, right? And so Jesus is calling him. On one hand, he's rebuking the attitude of the guy's teaching here, right? He's rebuking their view of Bartimaeus and how they're seeing him. The child's trying to silence Bartimaeus. The child is being a hindrance to Bartimaeus' healing. And so he's teaching them, you know, they need to do something different here. And so then he begins to teach them about what they should be doing. But we've seen a rebuking attitude before. And he says, you know, let the children come to me. Don't hinder them. You know, you have to accept your heart attitude on this one, folks. Are you in this about what I'm in this for, or are you in this for yourself? And so now, he goes and he starts speaking. Now, this is what you need to focus on. This is what you need. Don't hinder them. Don't keep them from coming to me. You need to be participating in my ministry. You need to be participating in what Jesus is all about. And then the joy of that. And this kind of, if you encourage Bartimaeus, take heart, Jesus is calling you. And later on, he's opening up to them this opportunity that they're going to participate together in this miracle. They're going to be a part of what Jesus is doing. Teaching them what that's about. And he starts teaching them about himself. This man, he's been brushed off by the crowd. He passed by the assessment of the crowd. Now, he's got nothing to offer. He's just some bum on the side of the road. And yet, Jesus brings this man to be front and center to demonstrate about how God works in his kingdom. He's demonstrating his compassion and his love and his mercy and his grace and how God desires to restore and to elevate those that are broken and cast down. But we need to grab on that. If he's teaching the crowd, he's teaching the disciples the things that we can learn from. You know, our own attitudes. By our actions and our attitudes, are we hindering people or helping them towards Jesus? Are we demonstrating Jesus' compassion and love and grace and mercy towards others or something else? Everybody's stuff. And Jesus is teaching. And he's demonstrating to them. And this cry for mercy is answered with all to come. He literally dropped over and dropped his cloak that Holly would have gotten caught up on and he jumped off and he just went running towards Jesus. What would that be like? Now, a blind man running in a direction. Years ago, I had a friend who was really blind. And on his bucket list was he wanted to drive a car. Okay, now there's something blind people normally do, right? Although sometimes watching how people drive around, you kind of wonder about that. But anyway, so Rich, as far as he's concerned here, to let him do that, so the two of them got in this large parking lot, really big parking lot, and, you know, Rich behind the wheel of the car, and his friend's there, but he's driving his car. What about that? Don't be blind, and he's constantly running through this crowd, doesn't care much about anything except getting to Jesus. Who he bumps into, who he runs over, what he says, it doesn't matter. I'm just getting to Jesus. I'm just going to Jesus, right? Kind of an example for us, isn't it? Think about it. Heart level, how desperate are we for God's healing in our life? Nothing else matters. We're willing to let go of everything. What we own, a pride, whatever, regardless of what stands in our way or what might restrain us. Whatever obstacle might be between us and Jesus, we're just all in. We're just running to Him. We've got to get to Jesus. How desperate are we for Jesus to heal in our lives? Verse 51 brings us to Jesus' question. Right? Here's the question. What is it? What do you want me to do for you?
Yeah.
Stay blind. You know? Heal him. What do you think? Let's be careful. There are other answers to that question, right? At this point, the child doesn't know why is this guy calling out to Jesus. All they know is he's a beggar who strategically located himself on Route 1 going to Jerusalem to beg, right? To cry out for mercy, mercy meaning money, right? Yeah. The possible answer number one, what do you want me to do for you, is man, brother from the city. There are some shekels here. Being a part of marriage is just like every other veteran on the road here. He's crying in life or he's tired of that. He's learning and cares and his expectation of just what it is that Jesus can do for him. Be careful. Jesus knows the answer to the question, right? Jesus knows by means before we ask for him. Jesus is questioning what he wants you to do for you. The question is focused on Bartimaeus' heart. And so he's chosen to cry, he's chosen to cry, he's chosen what heart level behind this cry for mercy. Now, Bartimaeus, what's really in your heart? Where are you at in the faith for tonight? Where are you at in the faith for your expectations of me? I question also, far too easy to ask for too little of you. Do you think it's too large and expensive? 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 Notice that Bartimaeus didn't ask for these shekels, right? He's asking for it. He's going for the whole enchilada with the rice and the beans and the whole thing. He's all the bad education brought him into front of the rabbi. That means he's having a check. Rabbi is the title of the check. Matthew and Luke, if they don't do this account, same account, they render that word as Lord. Even the bargaining is the book of the Jesus, not as your average, in the rabbi school, not the rabbi, but a term much greater than that. Recover in Greek has the idea of both redeeming and gaining. With Bartimaeus, he's looking to Jesus to give him something, his rabbi, his Lord, to give him something that only God can give. Fight, which the way this reads in Greek means both physical and spiritual sight. I want to recover my sight. I want to gain a whole lot more than that. Are we hearing there Bartimaeus' part in that? Are we hearing Bartimaeus' answer to Jesus' question? You know, what do you want me to do for you? And Bartimaeus, he ties things up. If he's knowing who Jesus is, by faith he asks to gain his sight, physical healing, yeah. But he's also asking for spiritual sight. He's asking for spiritual healing. Bartimaeus' answer to Jesus' question comes from a heart level faith that only Jesus can do for him what he needs, physically and spiritually. Which in verse 52 is what Jesus responds to. Great answer. But he said, and go your way. Faith has made you well. Made you well translates Greek verb sozo, which means to save from injury or peril. The word is used both for physical salvation from injury or salvation spiritually, from spiritual peril, even death. Jesus is referencing both. And Jesus physically healing Bartimaeus outwardly is demonstrating Jesus' response to Bartimaeus' inward spiritual condition, to Bartimaeus' cry for spiritual mercy, to his spiritual healing, to his salvation, redemption, and righteousness in relationship with God, for now and forever. We've seen this before, right? Remember Capernaum? Remember that? The four guys on the roof, cutting a hole in the roof, and they lower their paralytic friend down, and Jesus is looking at the face of these guys, and he says, your sins are forgiven. And that goes to the cry of Saul from the Pharisees, like, he's blaspheming. And Jesus says, what? Is it easier to say to the paralytic, your sins are forgiven, or to say, rise up, take up your bed, and walk? And he does what? Heals them, right? To demonstrate his divine authority to forgive sins. And so Jesus healing Bartimaeus of his physical blindness is demonstrating that he healed Bartimaeus spiritually as well. And verse 52 tells us that physical healing was what? 6 days, 6 weeks, went to the hospital, physical therapy. No, it's immediate, right? No surgery, no medication, no glasses, but instant, miraculous. It's only what God can do, and that demonstrates what's also true spiritually. Salvation is a miraculous, instant work of God. And immediately, sight restored, Bartimaeus follows Jesus on the way. What an example for us, right? He's all in now. He's going to be a disciple, meaning he's a disciple of Jesus. Whatever lies up that road in Jerusalem, Bartimaeus is all in. Processing all that. Four takeaways for us this morning. Four takeaways. First one is this. Bartimaeus encountered Jesus' healing power not on the basis of his own strength, but in his weakness. Not on the basis of his own strength, but in his weakness. Sitting on the side of the road, reduced to begging with no hope of anything ever being different, with no ability to ever change the direction of his life, the situation of his life. And the crowd really did get that one right, right? The crowd got it. Bartimaeus, he's got nothing, man. He's got nothing to contribute to what Jesus is doing. He's just a blind beggar on the side of the road, begging along with all the other blind beggars. God speaks through his prophet Joel. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. Everyone, meaning Bartimaeus. Everyone, meaning you and me. Most of us aren't exactly living the lifestyles of the rich and famous. Right? As you said, it's not exactly the cultural hub of the Western Hemisphere. With all of our foibles and failures and depravity and sin, even in our best moments, he tells us what it is, what do we bring to the table? What do we contribute to what Jesus is doing? Except weakness and brokenness, and we're beggars on the side of the road here in Merced. Who are we? Except the everyone of this world. And then takeaway number two is that Jesus took time for Bartimaeus. You get this? Jesus stopped. Say that with me. Jesus stopped. We saw this last night. Jesus is walking ahead, right? Jesus is on a journey. He's going from Galilee to Perea to Jericho to Jerusalem. He is on a mission. He is purposeful. He is focused. Jesus is at the height of his popularity. He's being followed by the disciples and the huge, swollen crowd of paparazzi with all their expectations. And all this takes place just before when? Before the high holy day. Before what becomes felt, you know, as Palm Sunday. But with the high stakes and the pressures and the emotions and the concerns and Jesus knowing what's coming, and the conflicts in the temple, and the betrayal, and the beatings, and the trial, and the rejection, and the scourging, and the humiliations, and the cross, and his death, and you know, I don't know how you guys handle pressure and multitasking interruptions and all that when we focus on something crucial. But if you're like me, not well. Right? And it is impressive that Jesus, with all of that, that is driving him and weighing him down, that Jesus is beginning this ascent to his assault on Jerusalem, he just stops the whole procession and takes time to focus with compassion, lovingly, graciously, mercifully on this blind beggar who has absolutely nothing to offer. It's almost like Bartimaeus is the whole reason Jesus is heading to Jerusalem. And in a sense, maybe he is. Right? So what's here is a real-time demonstration of what Jesus has been teaching back across the Jordan River in Perea, which we looked at, remember this from last Sunday? The greatest in the kingdom are those who serve, who are the slaves of all. And what stands out here is the greatness of Jesus as he calls this helpless man out of his darkness into the light of relationship and life with God. Jesus' compassion and care that leads to the salvation of a new disciple to the kingdom. And the takeaway for us in all of that is that Jesus always has time for us. You. Say that to yourself. Jesus always has time for you. And just cry out to him.
teaches us is why he has come to the flesh and blood of all humanity and journeyed to the cross. The third takeaway is that Jesus does not change. Jesus does not change. Sometimes we can read these accounts But the link that we have with them is not down on that level of our time and circumstance. Our link with all of that is God Himself. And it's really important to understand that link. The link here is God. A J.I. Packer quote, "The God with whom they had to do is the same God with whom we have to do." We could start from the point by saying exactly the same God. For God does not change in the least ridiculous. But it appears that the truth on which we must dwell in order to dispel the feeling that there is an unmeasurable gulf between the tradition of men, the Bible time, and our own, is the truth of God's real grace. Remembering that God means that God does not change. Which is a truth about God that is difficult, but it's impossible for us to see, and it's true because we change everything around us, and we see changing and how to change it, and the world changes, but God never changes. So in this, we never change. Maybe we will be, but we never change. God is not like a DC or a Marvel superhero, right? Maybe green power is a really good one. Good luck. Good luck. Several years ago, I was with a group of tourists, and we were visiting Bangkok, Thailand. Anybody ever been to Bangkok, Thailand? Different kind of place. Very different.
One of my overall impressions of Bangkok is that this is a city that is, for the first time, it's very dirty and that it is full of hopeless people. And our hotel was kind of like an island in the midst of the middle of all of that. A lot of high rise in the middle of the confusion and congestion and poverty. And so one night, about dusk, I left the whole hotel. I was kind of looking around to get some bargains. That kind of first because I was stopping beside it right near the hotel there. And so in doing that, I saw something really that was clear in my mind. I could put this here, even if I'm using it, I could put this here. On the sidewalk, 2 feet from our hotel, this modern highway, on the sidewalk, against the hotel wall, this boy, he was probably about 9 or 10 years old. He was born. The more people they are, the more pitied, especially by these kids, the more pitied and more money these people will be. But when you said, in many ways, there's no difference. And despite all of them, let me make sure I'm clear on the certain rules of things about living in the city, okay? Draw. So we know that when we open our eyes, what we see around us is humanity. It's easy for us to look outside and see all the brokenness of all of them, and that's the brokenness in itself. It's God, you know, that despite all his bodies, where the child is born, he has fired and he's been in the chapter of life, even in the devotion for God, if you were following Jesus and the character that came to Jerusalem, they had lost sight of their own depravity and sin and desperate need for what God was offering them in Jesus. And they and we were very much like fighting. The scribes and the Pharisees, the Pharisees saw Jesus eating with sinners and tax collectors, and they asked Jesus and his disciples, "Why are you eating and drinking with those people? They're tax collectors, they're sinners." And Jesus heard them and he said, "What? It's not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. I didn't come to call the righteous, but sinners. I came for the poor people, for the captives, the blind, the oppressed. And that's all. They have eyes to see." Sovereignty of God's plan, Jesus is purposely moving to Jerusalem to cause funding to the event that leads to the cross, to the resurrection, for hope to justice for those who are bound and are looking for relief. His marriages are breaking up, his families are coming apart, to hit rock bottom, to no way out. Those who struggle with deep issues with the heart and wounds and grief and stuff that we all struggle with. Those who are spiritually empty, those who understand the spiritual poverty and find out the gospel. John 10:10, Jesus says, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." And not just eternal and forever, but the spirit of empty right now with God. How about you? Bring it to God. Our Father, it is difficult for us at times to think about ourselves from the desperation of where we really do live our life. Because so often we have surrounded us with ourselves with, and we think about things in a way that it is as if we have it all put together and we're doing good with it. And yet there are times, God, when there are these teaching moments where you just kind of break into all that and say, "No, you know, you really need me." And God, we thank you for this example here of just contrasting a crowd that thought they had it all together and weren't seeing the desperation of their lives and their need for Jesus. And a guy like even Bartimaeus who had nothing who is crying out to Jesus for mercy. And Father, I pray for myself, I pray for each one of us here, that we would get that. That we will get this agreement to stop and to bring healing to our lives. And you were sitting here today and kind of between you and God, you know where you're at in all of that. You're there to think of God and find him out. But maybe there's something that's going to meet you to do the God to God for. But Jesus, God, thank you. I'm a house defender. I know where this is going, and I need to be. And maybe that's an emotional thing, maybe it's a physical thing, maybe it's a family thing, maybe it's a financial thing. And so maybe it is a spiritual thing. Maybe you're sitting on the side of the road and you're watching the crowd go by and you're realizing, my life is going nowhere. And I have no idea, even if it's something with me, even if I was in a barrier and a virtue or something. God, thank you for all that you have done for us in him, through him, for us. May you, God, as you cry out to you and you bring that healing and guide us each step of the way through whatever it is that we need to go through, God, may you receive the honor and glory for all of us. We thank you and pray in the name of Jesus.